State College Council, I take it, through the late 50s when you went Sacramento or San Francisco State, and I was just wondering if, very briefly, what some of the college president's impression was of McPhee about the time that you came on the council, and how great his influence was at that time, and perhaps in what way it changed and shifted after the transition in the state college system, or if he still remained as effective or not.
You just want me to talk?
Yeah, right. You were. Right.
My understanding is just for your information.
Yeah, I wouldn't want this release for any publication without having a chance to look at it.
Right.
If you're going to quote me.
If I get a good quote or something, why?
Yeah, I'm perfectly willing to have it used. I just like to make sure it's
okay.
Look at
and,
it.
Okay. And right. I'll be very happy to.
Well, the status of Julian McPhee was that of elder statesman of the college president's group. From the day that I entered the system to the day that he retired, Julian was a perfect example of the strong, directive type of college administrator who had certain definite ideas about the way in which a college should be structured, way in which a curriculum should be structured, and he saw to it that his will prevailed. Now, admittedly, because of his long tenure, some 34 years, he was president in an era when, before being a directive president became so tough.
Yeah.
It is no longer fashionable. And there are many forces, many pressures, which make presidents nowadays more into chief negotiators than into autocrats. Yeah. But McPhee was an autocrat, and I say that without criticism. He ran the college like a battleship, and he was proud of it, and he turned out an end product which he had a right to be proud of. He was worried about the strength of the faculty, and therefore, up until the time of the master plan, he maintained a four-year contract arrangement and refused to recognize tenure. This, of course, got him into difficulties with the accreditation organizations, with the AAUP, but he didn't worry about things like that. he developed a curriculum which was nicknamed nationwide the upside-down curriculum, emphasizing motivation, putting young students into areas in which they were deeply interested early in the game, rather than giving them a general education or a liberal arts program first before they got into their specialty, started right in on their specialty. And this worked so well, particularly in the fields that he was attempting to emphasize, applied fields of agriculture and engineering primarily, that he achieved a well-deserved national reputation for it. I have found that the morale on his campuses, I think very largely as a result of the tradition that he set, both student and faculty, has been high, in spite of anything that's been said to the contrary. Morale has been high, which indicates that maybe strong leadership not so evil after all. Maybe too much democracy, or maybe democracy can be overused in educational administration. I'm not drawing any conclusions to that, but certainly it worked for him. His approach to administration was that of the old line, old time, small college president. He maintained control of everything on his desk. He had wires out to everything that was going on the campus. Every decision that was made that was of any importance was made by him. He built up around him a cadre of younger administrators, and when any one of them defied him or threatened to rise to a position where he thought his authority was being challenged, there would be sudden and ruthless shifts in personnel. He was hard, rough, directive, autocratic type of administrator. And he turned out two very good colleges. Not colleges along the traditional pattern, but colleges that probably have achieved more of a record in terms of successful placement of their graduates in the areas where they were aiming than any other than the state colleges. I think we're beginning to equal that now in several of the state colleges, but for a time I think the Cal Polys were way ahead in that respect. The loyalty of his alumni organizations was unquestioned, high, and still is.
And I take it he had allied many things to get state support for Cal Poly.
Now, one of his major achievements, one of his major abilities was, of course, his ability as a politician.
Yeah. Right.
He moved directly into Sacramento and selected the state senate as his major goal. He was probably the most influential, one of the most influential people in Sacramento for many years.
Yeah, Word, Robert J. Word, I don't know if you know him. Told me, he was on my committee, by the way, with Cal before he had the job. So he's one of the most effective educational lobbyists.
He knew politics upside and down and sideways, and he practiced it skillfully and shrewdly, and had the high respect and high regard of the legislators. One of his concerns was that the master plan interfered with what he was trying to do. He wasn't necessarily opposed to the master plan, and we always got along well, and he cooperated and worked with us when it suited his purposes. But he didn't want the master plan or anything else to interfere with the goals which he had set for the Cal Polys. I always had high personal respect for him. I had a good many arguments with him, but I always had high regard for him. And he was, even though the trustees would disagree with him every once in a while, they would turn to him for advice and counsel when it came to legislative relationships or areas in which he was adept. I think he represented a type of college president which is rapidly disappearing. I don't know whether there are any left of that sort. There used to be quite a few of them, but not anymore. And his passing was sort of the passing of an era.
I was just wondering, on or off the record, which other way, do you think his big effort to get the Enabling Act put in, et cetera, and so forth, and this big power play he made on that, that this was necessary to preserve Cal Poly or not? Or of course, you well know he had the attitude that boards of trustees and administrators would come and go over the years, and he felt that this is what he had to have to guarantee sort of the diversification down there. I think that would have happened or not. Or
well, of course, my view of that is that he was using his legislative relationships to preserve what he had built.
Yeah.
I don't think he was unrealistic enough to feel that even statute law could not be changed, but it was just one more safeguard, and he was going to develop every possible safeguard. I know shortly before he retired, he was busily engaged in charting the course of both Cal Polys, in writing the master plans for Cal Poly San Luis and Cal Poly Pomona. And then would attempt to extricate from me letters of understanding with regard to specifics and details. And the thing that he was most concerned about was the percentage of enrollment.
Yeah.
He wanted the enrollment percentage always to emphasize the implied areas.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't approve of that. I thought that this was not the way to go about that particular mm-hmm. approach. But nevertheless, he was convinced that this was the proper mm-hmm. way to do it. Now, I may say that the trustees and I both fully agreed with him that both Cal Poly should retain a special approach to higher education. We felt that the guarantees that he was trying to establish legislatively were not always necessary, but that we would ourselves see to it that Cal Poly San Luis particularly maintain this approach.
Mm-hmm.
We also determined to see to it that Cal Poly Pomona maintained this emphasis, but we felt that Cal Poly Pomona was faced with a specific problem. If we retained McPhee's concept that the majority of the enrollment had to be in applied fields at Pomona, which is in an urban setting, it meant that the people of California would have to build another state college to take care of the student pressure. Whereas if we, while maintaining this emphasis at Pomona, allowed to build up around it other curricula and other programs, while not diminishing the mm-hmm. strength of these programs at the center,
mm-hmm.
We felt that his purpose would be achieved and we would get the job done with one college that might otherwise have to be done with mm-hmm. two, and that's the policy that President Kramer
mm-hmm.
has done.
Mm-hmm.
McPhee was very fearful in his last few years that this would change, and as Chancellor indicated, he undertook to do a number of things to stop this. I think that
we were successful in persuading him
that if he were to attempt to stand rigidly astride all of these things, he would surely break. And
well, I don't
as part of the result of that, his stand became somewhat more flexible and I think more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like the story about the palm tree, the bends and the
bend. I'm not sure that he takes the technicalities, but...
this was something I was looking at. Whether he was... my understanding, he never came out on the losing side, even if he had changed sides at the appropriate time at the last minute.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if he was flexible enough to see
just
that the... that the trend simply was going to pull him, and perhaps as you use the word,
this is a matter of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He was, in my mind, no question, he was somewhat flexible,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't flexible enough.
Mm-hmm.
It was too
mm-hmm.
difficult.
Yeah.
Too many years doing the same thing, same way. But as the Chancellor indicated, he persuaded all of us of the merit of what he was doing, and this is, I think, the essence.
Well, add another item.
Part
file,
of
I got phone
his continuing influence.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have to be here to tell us anymore
mm-hmm.
that we believe some of these things and
yeah.
carry them on for him.
Well, I'm taking the theme, building the theme of his advocacy of vocational education, et cetera, and occupational education. And just wondering to what extent he had contributed to establishing this concept, at least for Cal Poly, in higher education here in California, if it's significant enough to really call it that, and
really call it what?
Say that this is a distinct contribution to higher education here in the state, as far as going far beyond and in a different way than some of the other programs
that
the
other people have pushed for vocational occupational education, but I think Julian's approach was unique.
Yeah, and he had
and
the
I think it was carefully thought through and well carried out in a way that unmatched. See, what he was after was the middle-level competence.
Yeah.
He wasn't after the research engineer. He was after the supervising engineer,
yeah.
the guy who'd get out on the front line and run a corporate
mm-hmm.
farm,
mm-hmm.
for instance, an agricultural engineer,
mm-hmm.
or a fellow who would be operating the steam plant
mm-hmm.
with an engineering degree.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
he wasn't interested in research or
high-level
operations. He wanted the operators, the
right.
people who were out doing the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you come right down to it, maybe one of the things, in spite of the fact that both Dr. Rydell and I are out of the liberal arts, and this bothers us tremendously to contemplate it, maybe American higher education isn't concentrating enough on it. Maybe
mm-hmm.
we're doing too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can talk to me about that, Ed.
Yeah, well, this one's the whole problem of emphasizing vocational education today, whether or not he did have something valid to say.
The junior colleges aren't doing the job.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think
their unique function is to fulfill this obligation.
Yeah.
They're not doing it.
Yeah.
They're getting prestige happy. They're concentrating on.
He's got a good speech on this. what the junior colleges should be doing and aren't doing, and of course, I'm sure you may. I'm sure he said to you, but he said in a speech too that he was afraid that the college system went too far in one direction, the doctoral program, et cetera. The state's going to have to create something to fulfill this function because the junior colleges aren't doing it. He had that attitude. And I was just curious how much he felt irritated over the fact that state colleges were moving more and more in this direction, and quite obviously unsatisfactory direction to him as far as some of his later comments were concerned.
But
and,
I think he wound up by feeling that he didn't care what happened to the rest of the system as long as he were allowed to maintain the course of the two-canal policy.
Mm-hmm.
And he devoted every effort to maintain it. Yeah. Well, I'm sort of a Carlylean in my philosophy of history. Even though you see a person like this come along who doesn't always agree with you in every respect, I think this is where real progress is made in human organization.
Yeah.
You get a person who's really strong and devoted and hard-driving and insistent. He makes things happen.
Yeah.
We're all together too devoted to modern higher education letting things happen to us.
Dr. Berkman, you probably don't know him, but he retired. He was Deputy Secretary under Simpson and so forth.
Yeah.
Said, well, McPhee, all through the 40s and early 50s, a lot of men would talk about doing certain things, but at least if Julian said he was going to do it, he did.
That's right. That's right.
And this was a point that I had seen come out in a number of places. I noticed in this statement here, the tribute, you mentioned the same thing McPhee did. I don't know why I used the word, this quotation felt like we're big enough now that we're a challenge to the system, et cetera, and so forth. I take it he did sort of feel quite alone in this regard, and I was just curious, it's speculation, but the point is, it seems, wouldn't he have gotten along as well if he had been somewhat cooperative with the Trenton State College system and I don't see why he had to feel that he was being the threat of dilution was all around him.
Yeah,
this
of course I think this is largely more a matter of
personal
human personality. When a person, I suppose, when I get to the point where I'm almost ready to retire, I see a lot of young pipsqueaks coming up to alter what my life doing, I would feel
mm-hmm.
resentful
mm-hmm.
and try to dig my heels in and
mm-hmm.
do everything I could to
mm-hmm.
Retain the status quo, fight off what I thought were challenges. And I think this was just the natural reaction of, as I say, an elder statesman who felt he'd done a good job and saw a lot of people coming around who didn't have quite the same regard for it.
Yeah.
But he was wrong about that, in essence, because I think every one of us has fully appreciated what he did and is determined to maintain the
mm-hmm.
general approach. We think that to wrench Cal Poly into a San Francisco State, for instance, or San Diego State, or something of that sort, it would be silly.
Yeah.
It's fulfilling a very significant purpose
right,
to keep on.
So, and as a state college, especially emphasizing kids from all over the state can come in.
Now, we do insist that there be a more attention to the liberal arts, even in our applied programs, than Julian wanted,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see that dilutes what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it provides an education rather than just training, and he was more interested in the training than the broad educational base.
Yeah.
I think that we have insisted on certain traditions and certain standards in terms of faculty acceptance, living up to rules of tenure, and one thing and another that would enable us to gain full accreditation. I think we were more interested in recognition along more generally accepted lines of curricula and engineering and so on than he was.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think this is changing what he, you don't have to be absolutely unique in your job. And I think this was, if his approach had any weakness, this was it. He developed a program and he got the idea that veering a hair's breadth away from it would kill it. And this was not true. It was entirely possible to maintain the fundamental philosophical approach, which after all was his real creation, without being so worried about the proportion of students in certain fields,
mm-hmm.
the absence of basic liberal arts.
Yeah, yeah.
Patrick, would you use the word, though not in its negative connotation necessarily, intolerance in connection with Julian?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was intolerant of flexibility when it came to his own concepts. But of course, there again, you have, I think, every strong leader must have a certain amount
of
that makes him stronger in a very real sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you can think of institutions which are intolerant of what they've been able to do.
Yeah. Well, fine. I think he wired for the type of thing he did down there that was, can at least be looked at that way.
Well, he was really a great educator.
Mm-hmm.
Great educator.
Yeah. Who would you mention? I might.
Tom McGrath was one of his deans.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be here tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He's up in our Sacramento office today.
Mm-hmm.
He's really the only one that could help you here. The next would be George Klukas.
Yeah, Klukas. I
was over at SC.
Yeah.
Far away.
Right, I'm going to give him a ring this evening. What's his name?
What you like, sort of corollary to what the Chancellor said, that a kind of a sad aspect of his career is that he really never realized how persuasive he was. And I don't think that he anticipated that after he left, he died, the people who used that he considered to be opponents at times would actually try to maintain and improve his own program, not because he wanted them to, but because they believed in what he believed. And this, of course, is what lasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he realized that. Now, maybe I'm wrong. He was a very perceptive guy.
Like